Welcome. What is up? I am Mike Schneid of MikeDropSports.com, and I am here to walk you through all the things to know for an exciting weekend ahead in football, NFL Week 9, college football Week 10. Let's jump right into both. And when talking about this weekend, you have to start with Louisiana. Such a big weekend. The two biggest games of the weekend will take place in Baton Rouge and New Orleans. Let's start with Saturday. ESPN College Game Day is going to be in Baton Rouge for number one Alabama versus number three LSU. First of all, I love that they're both in the top three. I hate that they do the college football rankings the week before this game. One, because you know that Alabama is going to be in the top two or three. And, of course, this year LSU happens to be three. But they're talking about as if, oh, well, if the season ends today, these two teams are in the play. The season doesn't end today. They literally play in 5 days in the time that they're rankings come out, so this week they're meaningless. If LSU loses the two losses, they're probably out of the playoff picture. If Alabama loses, they still might be able to play their way back in, especially if they can get to the SEC championship game represented in the West and then beat Georgia, presumably there. But it's crazy to me that why wouldn't you know that they play the first weekend in November every year? Why wouldn't you just wait till the second weekend in November? Because now you have a real victory to talk about for Alabama. I think that's one of the big things, is that keep talking about the schedule for Alabama. They haven't played anybody. They've only played Texas A&M. It's the only ranked team that they've played. But they're destroying every opponent. So even if they aren't beating great teams, even if Tennessee isn't a great team, they're still putting up 50 on everybody. So I want to tell you a secret about Alabama-LSU. They're covering the 13.5. I get that LSU is the best defense that they have played all year. The Tigers are giving up just 15 points a game, which is somehow only 7th in the country. So somehow there's 6 teams better than them on defense. But they face a team in Alabama who's ranked 1st in points for at 54. I get the feeling that the differential between Alabama scoring 54 a game and LSU scoring 15 a game is going to be the difference here. And let me tell you, the other difference that I see is Joe Burrow. I know that everyone's really high on this kid. He only has 3 interceptions, so he's not really turning the ball over. He's been a bit of a game manager in some of the games. They rely on the run. They rely on their defense. He only has 6 touchdowns this season, but he's been very good. The one number I want to point out is that he's completing 53.8% of his passes. The reason why that's a big deal to me is the last 5 games between LSU and Alabama, no quarterback has broken 50% for LSU. Sorry, the last four games, 3 quarterbacks. So the last 2 years was Danny Etling. Danny Etling completed 12 of 26 and 11 of 24. In 2015, Brandon Harris completed 6 passes on 19 attempts. In 2014, it was Anthony Jennings completing 8 passes on 26 attempts. I'm not saying that Joe Burrow is going to be that bad, but coming into the game with a 54% average, I see him going below 50%, and I see that being the difference. I just think Tua Tagovailoa is too good. I think they're going to cover the 2 touchdowns, and here's the other thing. This is supposed to be such a big rivalry. LSU hasn't won in 7 years. Last time they beat Alabama was in the 2011 regular season. 7 straight victories for the Tide, which also includes that 2011 BCS championship game. The game that LSU won, I actually went back and I watched some of the highlights today. 9-6. That was billed as the game of the century when it was 1-2. Imagine if this game on Saturday is 9-6. I don't think anybody wants to see that. But I'll tell you what's not going to be 9-6. On Sunday, in the same state, just a couple hours away from Baton Rouge, we have the Rams at 7-0 taking on the Saints at 6-1. Such a huge game for the Saints, because all of a sudden, if you knock off the Rams, you control your destiny for the number one seed, which, of course, why wouldn't they want the road to the NFC Super Bowl to go through the Superdome? I love the way that both teams are playing right now, especially the Saints. Both teams are coming off of huge victories. The Rams beating the Packers, and the Saints getting that big win against the Vikings. It doesn't make up for last year in the playoffs, but, you know, it does help boost their confidence against such a big team. I had mentioned LSU winning 9-6 in 2011. Bet the over on this game. That's the only advice I have for you. The other advice is I think the Saints are going to win. The Rams are dominating their opponents. They're playing really well. But I love the way that the Saints are playing both offense and defense right now. They really stepped up last week against the Vikings. They've stepped up in previous weeks. There's something about the way that they are playing right now. Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas have such a great connection. I know Cooper Kupp comes back for the Rams, which is going to be a huge deal for them. But I think Jared Goff is due for one turnover one of these days. I think it's going to be one interception late in the fourth quarter, and that's going to do the Rams in. The other big game on Sunday, speaking of the Packers, who we mentioned lost to the Rams, they take on the Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Incredibly, this is just the second meeting between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. It seems hard to believe. I know that they're in opposite conferences, but Tom Brady's been around forever, and it feels like, at this point, Aaron Rodgers has been around for a long time, too. They last met in 2014, which is ironic because that season is the season that the Packers had a chance to get to the Super Bowl, and they had lost to the Seahawks. Of course, the Patriots would go on to knock off Seattle. But that was the best chance we had for a Rodgers-Brady Super Bowl. That was a fun game in 2014. Rodgers threw for 368 yards and two touchdowns. Brady threw for 245 and two touchdowns. It was business as usual for both Hall of Famers. Packers did get the victory, though. In 2010, they played again. Matt Flynn started the game for the Packers. Remember him? Speaking of LSU, Matt Flynn. And that obviously didn't bode well for the Packers. And then 2006, Rodgers was still backing up Brett Favre. They got blown out 35-0, so Rodgers did see the field. But they have only started against each other once. And it's the way that the Packers were playing this year. I don't see them ever playing again after this. Because I don't think Brady's going to be around another 4 years. And the Packers aren't going to the Super Bowl. I'm not even sure that the Packers are going to the playoffs at this point. I think the biggest thing for them is, getting everybody healthy and on the same page. But it seems like there's some turmoil between Rodgers and the receivers, Rodgers and the running backs. We know that he's publicly spoken out for Aaron Jones for some reason. Mike McCarthy refuses to play him. Maybe the trade of Ty Montgomery. I know he made a mistake last week, but maybe trading Ty Montgomery, it's kind of like Moneyball. If you trade Ty Montgomery, you have to play Aaron Jones. Watch, Jamal Williams is going to get 30 carries and a loss on Sunday. Taking the Patriots, remember when the season started and we were on week 3-4 and the Patriots were 1-2 and doom and gloom, oh my God, they're done. This is the end of Brady. This is the end of Belichick. The dynasty is over. Yeah. They've won 5 straight since. They're now 6-2. They're in total control over the AFC East. Nobody's going to catch them because those three teams are terrible. Derek Anderson, Nathan Peterman, some combination of them, Brock Osweiler. Those are two of your three starting quarterbacks. I like what Sam Darnold is doing for the Jets, but, still the Jets. Patriots are going to run away with the division. The question for them is, can they catch up to the Chiefs? I think the Patriots are going to get one of the two byes, and the Chiefs are going to get the other bye. The question now becomes, who gets the number one seed? And the Chiefs certainly have a much easier task on Sunday than the Patriots do. They have the Browns. So much has been made of the incredible game. So the Browns play the Chiefs, Baker Mayfield versus Patrick Mahomes. So much has been made of the incredible game from 2 years ago back in 2016 between Oklahoma and Texas Tech. These two quarterbacks, Mahomes and Mayfield, face each other. In that game, Mayfield threw for 545 yards and 7 touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes... He completed 52 passes. He threw 88 passes, 734 yards, but he only threw for 5 touchdowns. But in his defense, compared to Mayfield, he did run for 2. So they both contributed 7 touchdowns. He also had 85 yards. For the touchdowns for Mayfield, it's worth noting that Joe Mixon ran for 263 yards and 2 touchdowns and then caught 3 touchdowns and 114 yards. Dede Westbrook and Kiki Kuti, a Jaguar and a Texan, they were the two leading receivers for the for Oklahoma and Texas Tech, respectively. But, you know, going back to the game on Sunday, I don't think we're going to see 7 touchdowns from either quarterback. I do think we're going to see another big performance out of Patrick Mahomes as he continues to roll. Baker Mayfield, Browns underwent some changes this week because it wouldn't be Cleveland. There wasn't turmoil. They finally fired Hugh Jackson, who only won 3 games and 40 chances. You know, they gave him 40 chances. He got 3 wins. They also fired offensive coordinator Todd Haley. This isn't an original line. I saw somebody tweeted this earlier this week. But Hugh Jackson is the only coach that could tie in a power struggle. When he was fired, everyone assumed, oh, Todd Haley wins out. Todd Haley gets to be the offensive coordinator, maybe the interim coach. Not true. 2 hours later, we all found out that Todd Haley was also, in fact, fired. Good stuff in Cleveland. I don't think they have much of a chance heading into the bye. I think they, at this point, they just need to regroup and get their offense and their defense figured out. Patrick Mahomes, we mentioned, comes in 26 touchdowns, leading the league, and 6 interceptions. Baker Mayfield has struggled a little bit the last few weeks. I'm not sure if it's kind of a short week for them with the coaching changes. I'm not sure if this is the week for him to break out, but they have a bye week 10, and then maybe after that he can kind of regroup himself and, you know, get better. Ironically, in terms of Mayfield versus Mahomes, their alma maters actually play on Saturday. Tech coming off of a tough loss to Iowa State last week, and Oklahoma, they came in at number 7 in the college football playoff rankings. They just need to keep winning. If they win out, which will involve beating West Virginia, it may also involve beating Texas if they meet again in the Big 12 championship game, or maybe mean playing West Virginia again, Iowa State, who knows. But they have a tough task ahead of them. They also have to beat Oklahoma State. I missed that one. They beat Texas last week, so Oklahoma State's clearly a formidable opponent for Oklahoma beyond just the fact that it's a rivalry. Sooners need to win out to have a chance to make the playoffs, though. Oklahoma has won 6 straight against Texas Tech dating back to 2011. Actually, the last time Texas Tech won, 41-38. They won in Norman and actually snapped a 39-game home winning streak for the Sooners. We mentioned Tua Tagovailoa and how amazing he's been all year. He's got 25 touchdowns, no interceptions. I actually think, meant to mention this before, I think he throws his first interception on Saturday. I think LSU is the team. And then they're the ones that got that first interception. But if it wasn't for him, Kyler Murray would be embedded into this Heisman discussion. The future Oakland Athletics pitcher has 28 touchdowns throwing and 3 interceptions. He is really doing a great job carrying this Oklahoma offense. But, you know, the whole world, it revolves around Tua. And here's what I think as far as Tua Tagovailoa goes. 2019, not a great draft for quarterbacks. You have Justin Herbert from Oregon, Daniel Jones from Duke, Drew Locke from Missouri. What I think teams near the top of the draft should do is hashtag tank for Tua in 2020. I think that a team picking near the top, whether it's the Giants, the Raiders, the 49ers aren't going to take a quarterback, neither the Cardinals, but you know, what these teams should consider, a team like the Giants, take Ed Oliver, the big D tackle from Houston. Take Nick Bosa from Ohio State, or Clelin Ferrell, or anybody from that Clemson defensive line. Then you have a surefire defensive stud, and then you can tank for Tua. One of the teams that should definitely tank for Tua is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, for the 4th time this season, are going to start Ryan Fitzpatrick on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. My fear is that despite his outstanding second half performance last week, and despite how good he has been all year, I think the Magic's going to run out. I think Carolina is such a good defense. I think they're going to force a couple of turnovers and contain the offense. I have the Panthers winning this game, and I think Fitzpatrick may struggle a little bit. Speaking of Fitzpatrick, Bears play the Bills on Sunday. The last time the Bears beat the Bills was in 2010. Ryan Fitzpatrick actually started for the Bills in a 22-19 loss. He threw 51 passes in that game, did complete 31, but didn't break 300 yards, and only threw 1 touchdown to 2 interceptions. The Bills did win the last meeting, though, against the Bears in 2014. EJ Manuel started for the Bills against Jay Cutler. Buffalo actually ran for a total of 164 yards using three men, Fred Jackson, C.J. Spiller, and Anthony Dixon, all combining for a strong game. Sadly, that's not what's going to happen on Sunday against the very dominant Bears defense. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Khalil Mack sat like he did last week. I know he's been banged up. They have much bigger games coming up on their schedule than playing the Bills. They can win this game without Mack. They proved that last week. They beat the Jets, who are a much better team than the Bills. They beat them by two touchdowns without Mack. I think they really need to get LeSean McCoy going. I don't know if McCoy just sucks, if it's really the offensive line, or if, you know, their teams are putting 11 in the box because Derek Anderson is the quarterback, or now Nathan Peterman is the quarterback. I'm not going to get into it on Nathan Peterman. If you've visited the site at MikeDropSports.com, I've written enough about Nathan Peterman. I've been mean enough on him. He's literally the worst starting quarterback in the history of the NFL. I can't possibly comprehend why he's still on our roster, but Nathan Peterman's presence in Buffalo, and I'll say this too, Nick Mullins' presence in San Francisco as the 49ers play tonight and Mullins starts for an injured C.J. Beathard, those two guys being starting quarterbacks is a really, really bad sign for high, recent high draft picks like Christian Hackenberg and Davis Webb, that these guys can't start or can't even take a snap in the NFL, and we have Nathan Peterman starting. But so I have the Bears winning that one by a lot. Back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I do think the magic runs out for Fitz, but what do you do with Jameis Winston? He's played four games, and he has 10 turnovers this year. What do you do with a guy that won the Heisman Trophy and the national title at Florida State in 2013? Florida State this weekend faces NC State, 1 week after an embarrassing 49-point loss to Clemson. Look, I love Clemson. They're great. They're going to be back in the playoffs this year. But not long ago, actually about 3 years ago, Florida State was not just on Clemson's level, they were the superior team. As of 3 years ago, Florida State had a three-game winning streak against Clemson. They were better. Clemson in no universe should be 49 points better than Florida State. It's almost like Willie Taggart isn't a good coach, which, you know, looking at his record is weird because he was four games under 500 at his alma mater at Western Kentucky for 3 years. He was one game under South Florida, including a 2-10 record in his first year. He used a 10-win season at South Florida to propel into the Oregon job. He stayed there just 1 year, went 7-5 last season. And now he's moved on to Florida State, where he is a really, really bad 4-4 on a really, really bad team. I think NC State coming off with two straight losses. They lost to Clemson. They lost to Syracuse last week. Gave up 50 points, actually, to Syracuse. The game looked more like a basketball score than a football score. But I think NC State is going to crush Florida State. They'll get back to their winning ways. Speaking of NC State, let's segue back to Sundays. Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson are the two most prominent quarterbacks and probably players. Well, Bradley Chubb, there's some other guys. But Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson, two most prominent quarterbacks to come out of NC State that are active. Chargers play the Seahawks. Chargers are quietly 5-2. They've won four straight, having a really strong season, not getting a whole lot of play, mostly because of how good the Chiefs have been. And the Chiefs are probably going to win that AFC West, but the Chargers should really be the favorite and I think are going to get one of the two wild card spots in the AFC. Seahawks, meanwhile, they're 4-3. They're hanging around. They started 0-2. People were down on them coming into the season because of a lot of the injuries, and I know they lost so many guys on defense, but you know, they're playing well, and this is a big game for them to kind of stay in the hunt. But Rivers, I want to kind of look at Rivers and Wilson and think about how they compared from NC State. Rivers played 47 games in 4 years. He threw for over 13,000 yards, 95 touchdowns, and 35 interceptions. NC State was actually 34-17 in his 4 years, including 3-1 in bowl games. Hugely successful. Actually, he was more successful than Russell Wilson. Wilson only was there for 3 years, did throw for over 11,000 yards. He threw 76 touchdowns and 26 interceptions, but NC State was only 20-18 in those 3 years. Of course, he transferred to senior year in 2011, went to Wisconsin, they won the Rose Bowl, he became a Seahawk, they won the Super Bowl, they went to another, and the rest is pretty much history. But so let's go back to Willie Taggart for a second. Now, he was at Oregon for one season. Now it's Mario Cristobal, who is on his staff. He's the new head coach at Oregon. His team has lost two straight. They're kind of reeling a little bit. They lost an emotional game at Washington State when College Game Day was in Pullman. And I don't know what happened last week, but somehow they got blown out by a really bad Arizona team in Tucson. I'm sure they want to put that one behind them. UCLA comes to town, speaking of really bad teams. UCLA comes to town at Autzen Stadium. UCLA is 2-6. But why do we care about this game? Because it's Chip Kelly reunion week in Oregon. Chip Kelly was the coach of the Ducks from 2009 to 2012. He lost seven times in 53 games. A loss by UCLA on Saturday will match that total in just nine games. Really amazing. It really goes to show you how good those Oregon teams were. And, you know, give him some credit and cut him some slack. UCLA does have the fourth youngest team in the FBS. They have played a tough schedule. I think people were mocking their non-conference schedule in the beginning of the year. They lost the opening week to Cincinnati, who is 7-1. They got blown out by Oklahoma, who's also 7-1. Obviously a great team, bidding for the playoffs. And they also lost to Fresno State. Fresno State is trying to contend for that group of five spot. They have just one loss this season. Part of the problem with Chip Kelly is that when he was at Oregon back in 2009 when he first started, he ran this up-tempo offense, and he had this special system. And it was special. It was very cool to see. The problem is, in the 7, 8, 9 years since, everybody runs this system. Nobody huddles, except for, you know, Wisconsin and Northwestern. I think UConn huddles too, but nobody cares about UConn. But nobody huddles. Everyone goes quick. Everyone goes up-tempo. So the rest of the country has caught up to Chip Kelly. And this was also his issue in the NFL, why he, amongst many reasons, why he might not have been as successful, is because people caught up to him. And his style wasn't so unique anymore. I think he will turn things around, and I think he'll be fine at UCLA. He needs to get some more experience there. He needs to get the players to buy in. This just, you know, I actually thought that they were going to go 4-8 this year. I actually didn't think UCLA was going to be very good, knowing that they had a young team and knowing that Chip Kelly incorporating his system would take some time, going from the pro-style offense that Jim Mora Jr. ran the last few years. Chip Kelly was the offensive coordinator at Oregon, so he had his system, he had his players in place when he took over there. So, you know, I think it's going to take them some time. The rivals of UCLA and Oregon actually face off in Corvallis when a really bad USC team takes on Oregon State. The Trojans are actually 62-11 all time against Oregon State, including 9 of the last 12. UCLA comes in. USC comes into this game coming off of a terrible loss to ASU. Hey, let's use this as another connection to segue into the NFL. USC has produced a whole lot of great NFL players recently, which is odd for a school like USC. But one of the better players seems to be Sam Darnold, who was the number 3 pick to the Jets this past year. Jets take on the Dolphins, who are starting former Arizona State quarterback Brock Osweiler for the fourth straight game. Miami has won 4 of the last 5 against the Jets, including week 2 earlier this season. But this is a different Dolphins team. This Dolphins team has been hit hard by injuries, and they've also been hit hard by coaching. Adam Gase might be one of the worst coaches in the NFL. He's using Minkah Fitzpatrick as a slot cover corner. He's not using him in his natural position. Of course, he's using Brock Osweiler. I think there's something going on with Ryan Tannehill. Kenyon Drake is not touching the ball 20 to 25 times like he should be. It seems like it's a team in disarray. The Jets aren't a terrible team. The Jets are just a team that doesn't have as much talent as everybody else around them. But I actually like this as a bounce-back spot. I think you're going to hear more Jets fans in Miami than you are going to hear Dolphins fans. I don't have a fancy segue for this one, but Michigan takes on Penn State on Saturday in a game with both playoff and Rose Bowl implications. It seems very likely that the loser of Michigan-Ohio State late in November is going to represent the Big Ten of the Rose Bowl while the winner makes the playoffs. If the winner of that game doesn't make the playoffs, then they will represent the Rose Bowl. I'm not sure how much confidence I have in Penn State with the way that they've struggled. in recent weeks on offense. I'm not sure how much confidence I have in them to move the ball against a really, really good Michigan defense. I know that Michigan's offense, led by Shea Patterson, isn't that great. They're not exactly lighting the world on fire. This should be one of those traditional low-scoring defensive Big Ten battles. And I think Michigan, because of their defense, will make just enough plays and just enough stops to beat Penn State. I think they could win by about 11 points. I actually like them to run the table up until they get to the Ohio State game, which is going to be just for everything. I mentioned that this game has Rose Bowl implications. Of course, Michigan can't lose if they want to stay on pace for the Rose Bowl. On the other side of that, who would have thought that Utah and Washington State would be the top two favorites at this point to make the Rose Bowl? Not USC, not UCLA, led by Chip Kelly. Arizona was everybody's darling pick, and what a bad year for the Arizona Wildcats to suck. This was their one opportunity. They're the only traditional Pac-10 team to have never made a Rose Bowl, and this was it. This was their shot with Khalil Tate. He's been banged up. They couldn't take advantage of a bad Pac-12 South. Instead, Utah is now in the driver's seat. A couple tough games coming up ahead, but if they win out, they will represent the Pac-12 South, while Washington State will represent the North. Far from over in both of those. Stanford plays Washington on Saturday, and a game that you would have thought would be the biggest in the Pac-12. And, it's still a big game between two good teams, but not two great teams, like many people expected. Bryce Love, it's almost like a sad story at this point. Bryce Love is, I don't, he's been injured. He's been really, really bad. And Jake Browning doesn't seem to have progressed at all in the last 2 years, the senior quarterback from Washington. He's looked really bad this season. And basically, the loser of this game is eliminated from Pac-12 North contention. A Stanford win keeps Wazoo in the driver's seat since Washington State has the win against Stanford. If Washington wins and both Washington and Washington State win out, it comes down to the Apple Cup, same day as Michigan, Ohio State, and the winner of that will represent the Pac-12 North. Washington State is just playing so well. I don't see how any other team can get there. Gardner Minshew. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this guy outside of Pullman, Washington, but you need to know who Gardner Minshew is. He's the guy that completed 25 of 26 passes on Saturday and that come-from-behind victory against Stanford. He's the guy who has 26 touchdowns and leads the nation with 3,183 yards passing. He has 400 yards passing in five of his seven games this year. If it wasn't for a guy from Alabama or the quarterback in Oklahoma, we'd be talking about Minshew a lot more. And Minshew should get acknowledgement when it comes to the Heisman. He should be a top five finalist. He should get the invite to New York City. We'll see if that happens. Utah has never made the Rose Bowl. It would be a great story to see them there. For Washington State, they haven't been there since 2003. They haven't won it since 1916. So it would be great to see a Washington State or a Utah, kind of a non-traditional powerhouse team, take on Ohio State and Michigan and see what they could do. I think Ohio State might not be as motivated and they might be ripe for an upset, whereas Michigan, it'll still be their first Rose Bowl in some time, and I think they will come out very motivated and fired up to play in that game. Back to the NFL, the Steelers take on the Ravens on Sunday, and it almost feels like a mini playoff game in a way. The Ravens won the first meeting, and sweeping the Steelers would really give them a huge edge in that AFC North race, which comes down to the two of them and the Bengals. Giving them the tiebreaker would really be a huge deal. A Baltimore loss would put them 3 games behind Pittsburgh in the loss column, making a run for the divisional title challenging. Ravens have lost 2 straight, coming off back-to-back losses to the Saints and the Panthers, while the Steelers have bounced back from their rough start and they've won 3 straight games since they lost to the Ravens. And forget about Le'Veon Bell. I don't think there's any reason for anybody to talk about Le'Veon Bell at this point. They don't need him. James Conner has been terrific. He's third in the NFL in rushing behind only Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott. Maybe they should have traded Le'Veon Bell. I don't know what the market was like for him, but they probably should have done it in the offseason, or they should have done it this past week. It was actually a very exciting trade deadline this year. Usually it isn't. One of the biggest trades was Demaryius Thomas going from Denver to Houston. Thomas will fill the void left by Will Fuller's knee injury. And ironically, Denver, or the Texans actually visit Denver this weekend. So Demaryius Thomas reunion game in Denver. I think Houston will continue to roll. They're 5-3 after their 0-3 start, and in a division where the Jaguars and the Titans are really struggling and the Colts aren't that good of a team, I like the Texans to win on Sunday against the bad Broncos team. It's also Case Keenum reunion day, of course. He spent some time with the Texans, but I'm not sure if Demaryius Thomas will have any kind of impact. But the impact that he will have is that, I'll get to that in a second, but Demaryius Thomas first. He was the first wide receiver off the board in what turned out to be a terrible draft for wide receivers in 2010. He was the first wide receiver off the board. Dez Bryant was the second. There's only five guys that are still actively in the NFL. Six guys in the NFL from that draft. It's some guy named Antonio Brown that was the 22nd drafted wide receiver that year. Andre Roberts on the Jets, Brandon LaFell, who I guess he scored a touchdown last week with the Raiders. I guess he's still alive. He's still in the league. Who knew that? And then Demaryius Thomas's old teammate, Emmanuel Sanders. Some other notable names from that draft mentioned Dez Bryant, Eric Decker, and forever a favorite of mine, Marty Gilliard. The trade of Thomas means that Emmanuel Sanders can step up, and so can Cortland Sutton. Case Keenum, who played his college football at Houston, will now be thrown to those guys, Sanders and Sutton, who ironically both played for SMU. Good segue. Houston plays SMU on Saturday night in Dallas. SMU coming off of an absolutely terrible home loss to my Cincinnati Bearcats. Cincinnati won on a walk-off pick six. I had never seen that before. That was just very cool. While Houston put up over 50 points in a win over previously unbeaten USF. Houston's been overlooked for most of the season. They're really setting themselves up for what's going to be a play-in game in the American Athletic Conference Championship game, assuming Houston wins out and they have just the one loss, which right now is to Texas Tech. They would set themselves up to play most likely UCF in the American Conference Championship game, and the winner of that game would most likely claim the Group of Five bowl bid, which looks like it's going to be the Fiesta Bowl this year. Also for, you know, New Year's Six Bowls, talking about the playoffs, you got to talk about Notre Dame, who comes into Saturday night still undefeated. They're in the driver's seat. If they win out, they're going to make the playoffs. They have a huge game Saturday night against Northwestern. I don't trust Northwestern. They beat Wisconsin last week. Wisconsin's not a good team. I think it'll be a very close game, and I think the first half is going to be really good. Northwestern could have the lead. You know, they're going to have the fired-up crowd, and they might have some momentum on their side, but I just know at the end of the day, Notre Dame, offensively, defensively, they're just too good. They're much better than Northwestern. I think they're going to show it. They know what's in front of them, and I think Brian Kelly will do a good job keeping them motivated and on track to make the playoffs. One of the more prominent Notre Dame players in the NFL, Golden Tate, he was traded on Tuesday, traded from the Lions to the Eagles. I like that move for the Eagles. They really needed to get somebody on their offense to help boost them. The idea of trading Golden Tate, it's not necessarily about selling for the Lions. They did acquire Snacks Damon Harrison last week. So it's an interesting move, and it seems like it's meant more to free up more targets for Kenny Galladay, who is really broken out this year. Lions take on the Vikings this week in what's truly a must-win game for Detroit, who's coming off of a loss to the Seahawks. A loss by Detroit clearly puts them at the bottom of the NFC North, a very competitive division. It also includes the Packers, Vikings, and the Bears. On paper, they all look like the better teams. So Lions really need to keep pace. And, of course, beating one of their own division rivals would be a good start. Two more games to cover in the NFL. Falcons, Redskins. The Redskins are incredibly in first place. They're 5-2 in the NFC East. Falcons are 3-4. They've struggled horribly with injuries this year. They've beaten the Redskins five straight times. The last time Washington won was actually in 2003. It was Steve Spurrier's second season in Washington. They started 2-0 after that victory, but they finished 5-11. Patrick Ramsey, their 2002 first-round pick out of Tulane, was the quarterback for the Redskins that season and that game. The Falcons, well, they stunk. Sadly, that was because that was the year that Mike Vick broke his leg in the preseason. So not much doing there for the Falcons. And then our last game, remember when Mississippi State was ranked number one in 2014? They were actually the first ever number one ranked team in the first ever college football playoff. That team was led by Cowboy quarterback Dak Prescott. Their first loss came late in the season, week 11, to number 5th ranked Alabama. Weird to see Mississippi State was ranked 1 and Alabama was ranked 5. But Alabama gave Mississippi State their first loss. Ironically, the reason I bring this up is because Prescott's newest number 1 wide receiver, Amari Cooper, was one of the stars of that game. He had 6 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. On the other side of things, the Cowboys playing the Titans. Derrick Henry also in that game. He ran for a touchdown for Alabama too. One more fun connection from that game. The last time Cowboy running back Ezekiel Elliott faced Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota on a Monday night in the Cowboys Stadium was that same 2014 season in the national championship game when Ezekiel Elliott's Buckeyes beat Oregon in the national championship game. All right, that was a lot. That was a mouthful. I hope you enjoyed the podcast here. Mike Schneid from Mike Drop Sports. Plenty more to come. Check out the site. We have all your nostalgia. We put a nostalgic touch on present events, remembering old names and games. Until next time, thanks for listening.